Research Council Centre of Excellence in Future Low Energy Electronics from Monash University. Michael, welcome to Triple R.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Now, you're working in this area of low energy electronics, which is something I suppose most people don't think about this, but how much of our sort of global energy use is taken up at the moment by consumer electronic products and the like?
So the surprising thing is that it's about 5% of the electricity around the globe. It's as much as 10% in the United States. So it's something that's really growing, where a lot of sectors the electricity use is going down, but this one's really going up quite fast.
Is that sort of just devices and stuff, or telecommunications as well, or both?
Yeah, that includes all of the communications and the information communications technology, but a lot of it is computing. So it's actually running programs, running applications, doing computations. And the interesting thing is that a lot of that now occurs where we don't see it. So it's not in our devices, but it's out in the cloud. And so it's in a server farm somewhere, and those server farms are using a lot of energy.
Yeah, for aircon, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, some of it's aircon, so that you need to keep them cool, and you need to just, you know, power those computers that are crunching through the numbers.
Are we better off with that sort of large scale scenario than when we had everything in our own offices and homes, or has it gotten worse with everything being out there?
So there are gains in efficiency every year, so in some sense we're better off, but the thing that we have to realize is that every year we want a lot more computations done. So it's about 70%. So every year on the planet, we do about 70% more computations, or computers calculating something. And it's getting more efficient, but we think that those efficiency gains are really going to end, and we're going to run out of steam in making silicon transistors, the kind of devices that we use now, better, so they can compute more efficiently. And so that's a real problem.
And when we get onto that stuff, I mean, that's where your work is. What is causing all the energy use? I mean, where is all the energy going? That's the part that I suppose a lot of people don't think about, is when you turn your computer on, or when you turn one of these server farms on, a lot of energy is used, but to do what? Where's it going?
Yeah, so it turns out there's a fundamental limit. When you throw a switch, so computers are basically a bunch of switches, and billions of switches on a computer chip, but they're little electronic switches, and they switch on and off. And every time you switch them on and switch them off, you have to charge them up. And then you have to get rid of that energy. And so there's some energy wasted there. And it turns out there's a lot of energy that's wasted in current that just runs through those chips all the time. And it is sort of wasted energy.
So dissipated as heat, presumably.
Yeah, and it's dissipated as heat. So it comes out as heat.
And why haven't we sort of, it seems to me unusual that, you know, when we can send probes across the solar system that simply operate on heat from nuclear decay, you know, to generate electricity. We have all this heat just coming out of these devices nonstop. And, you know, if you ever put your laptop actually on your lap, and I know people don't generally do that, you feel that heat. I mean, why don't we utilize that loss in some way?
You can get some of that energy back. You can't get it all, right? So thermodynamics tells you you're not going to get everything back, but you can get some of it back. And that's something that we're looking at, or we're not looking at, but scientists are looking at. And so there are ways to get some of that energy back. And that's, but you know, it's only going to make things 20% more efficient, something like that. You can might get some 20% back.
Yeah. Now we're reaching this crunch point where we want to do more, do it smaller, do it faster. What are you guys working on to sort of get around that? Because presumably we're it's a brick wall, right? We can't just keep making these things smaller.
Yeah. So the industry has really recognized this. The electronics industry, they know they need a new technology, and not only that, they know that that technology is, they don't know what it is, right? It's going to be something that's completely different than what we have now. I mean, if you're an electrical engineer and you're going in to learn about electronics, so you're going to be working, you know, during your career in something that's different than silicon transistors. And so, so it's an interesting time. We don't know what the solution is. We have our ideas, and we have some pretty promising ideas that we're working on. But the idea is that we need to make a new kind of switch that can switch with lower energy to replace silicon.
Before we get into your new kind of switch, there was a couple things I just wanted to ask about that I think I've seen in the industry now. So the limit is how closely you can space all these circuits on a chip is one of the limits, although you're talking about an electrical one as well.
Yeah, so making the transistors smaller helps, right? So every year the transistors get a little smaller, and we're running out of room there. So we're getting down to the bottom where we can't make them much smaller. But it's true that every year they get smaller and they get more efficient, and that's one of the roadblocks we're going to hit, is that we can't make them any smaller.
So I mean, what I saw most recently, I think maybe it was at IBM, is instead of computer transistors are made in a very two-dimensional pattern, that they basically tried to make them in a three-dimensional pattern by putting them on end, and so they can stack them closer together. Maybe they were using nanowires. But regardless, that might get them a little bit closer, but that still doesn't really address the energy challenges.
Yeah, I mean, the best estimates are that when we get to the end of what we can do with silicon transistors, that we'll still be about four orders of magnitude away, so about 10,000 times away from the fundamental limits that are set by the amount of energy you need to use to flip a switch. And so there is room there, but we think that silicon won't get there. We need something else.
So what would that look like? I mean, this entire technology is based really on sort of what, 40s, 50s stuff that has just been built up, made smaller, made better, cleaner, faster.
Yeah.
But you're talking about like literally a paradigm change, as in go back to basics and recreate that switching technology from the ground up. What does that look like?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we're looking at making a new switch, and we have a couple approaches. We're focused on ways that we can actually get electrons to move through a material at room temperature with zero resistance. Mm. And that helps part of the problem, in that if you have zero resistance, you're not wasting any energy as heat. And so that actually sounds pretty fantastic, but there are a couple of concepts that have come out recently in physics that tell us that we can do it. So one of the ways that we want to do that is to use topological materials. So these are materials that are insulating in their interior, but they conduct on their surfaces or their edges. And if they're very thin, they conduct along edges. And those edges are just one-dimensional edges. So they're kind of like little highways for the electrons, where they can only go one direction and they don't turn around. And so they can conduct without resistance. And so that's great on the drawing board. At the moment, it's only been shown at very low temperatures. But if we get the right materials, we think we can push it up to room temperature. And the idea then is to make a kind of a switch, where you switch on that topological effect and you switch on this resistanceless conduction, and then you can turn it off. Mm. And so that's one way to do it.
Mm. And what sort of materials do you think you'd be trying on next? Would these be natural materials or something that you'd have to make in the lab?
No, they're really going to be something new. So they probably not something that occurs in nature. So in terms of the topological materials, we're really looking at materials that are atomically thin. So we want things that are really two-dimensional. And so graphene is a good example of an atomically thin material. So something that's fairly new. It's one atom thick carbon. It's not a topological insulator. So in order to make a topological insulator, we actually need heavy elements. And so we need things like bismuth. So atomically thin bismuth would be fantastic. So that's one of the things we're trying to make.
Mm. One of the things I always found whenever you look at these new approaches is the materials themselves to do the circuitry, you know, are hard enough. But then the endpoints, the connectors, always seem to be where these things fall down. I mean, how is that work going? I mean, because it seems as though if you remove all the resistance from the switch itself, but then there's a huge resistance either side of it, you kind of lost the game. I mean, is that a big problem that you have to overcome?
It'll certainly be a problem. I mean, this is the reason that we actually have to do this kind of research. I mean, otherwise, you wouldn't need a research program. So we're doing very basic research. We're starting at the point where we don't even really have the materials we need, and we're trying to figure out how to make them. But yeah, once we make those materials, we've got to figure out how to make contacts to them so that are efficient, that get the electrons in and out. Just as you said, we have to figure out how to fabricate devices. And so it's a 7-year program that we have that's just starting, and which is great, because we have 7 years really to work out all these issues.
It'll go fast.
So you're mentioning, obviously, these are quite novel materials that you have to make. I'm assuming that scale is going to be an issue. So when you start to produce these new materials, how much do you think you'll actually get?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at things that we can make in thin films that we think we could make on the wafer scale, right? So computer chips are made on these silicon wafers, so that they're planar. They're made across very large areas these days. They make 300 millimeter wafers, like dinner plates. And so we do want to look at things that we can make like that. I think, you know, right now we'd be happy with making anything, so we can't necessarily scale it, but it's certainly a concern to be able to do that.
And Michael, just finally on the center itself, it's just started a few months back.
Right.
Are you still recruiting? Is it, how big is it going to be?
Yeah, I mean, it's we have 19 investigators at 6 universities across Australia. It's and we are recruiting. We're looking for students and postdocs and to come work with us. So there's still positions to fill. I think it's really exciting stuff. Mm-hmm. So any students out there who are interested in electrical engineering, physics, material science, come talk to us.
Sounds great. Professor Michael Pura, thanks so much for coming in and chatting to us today, and good luck for the next 7 years.
Yeah, okay, thanks for having me.
Professor Michael Pura is Director of the Australian Research Council Centre of Excellence in Future Low Energy Electronics at Monash University, and importantly, they're recruiting folks, so have a look at their website and see if you can slot yourself in, because it's an important area and one that hopefully, if it goes well, will be a big industry for Australia. You're listening to 3RRR. We're going to take a break and we'll be back in just a moment. We're going to be talking about geothermal energy.